today on Building the Open Metaverse.
We're clearly at this inflection point where it's time for the next thing. But I think much like when we throw out any next tech word, there's so little agreement on exactly what it means. And so it's that big first hurdle of all agreeing on where we're headed and exactly what is meant when you use those words.
Welcome to Building the Open Metaverse, where technology experts discuss how the community is building the open metaverse together. Hosted by Patrick Cozy from Cesium and Mark Petit from Epic Games.
Hello, everybody, and welcome for this special end-of-year edition of Building the Open Metaverse, the podcast where technologists come to discuss how the community is building the open metaverse together. So I'm super happy to be here with my partner in crime and co-host Patrick Cozy from Cesium. Patrick, welcome.
Hi, Mark. Hi, everybody.
And we brought a special guest today with us to talk about 2021 and do a little bit of a year in review. Ruth Thiele from Red Hat has agreed to join. And Ruth, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back.
We had a great time talking about open standards and open source last time around, and we felt it was an important theme. So we're super happy that you're taking the time to be with us today.
Always glad to talk about open.
So what we're trying to do today is really sit. I mean, that's what the traditional end of year exercise, look back at 2021, and it feels it's been an important year for the metaverse. And the three of us were wondering, you know, what happened? Why, you know, it felt like January 2021, the metaverse was a concept that was like very geeky, and then it burst into the mainstream. And I remember, I mean, when Tim Sweeney did his SIGGRAPH, I think it was 2019, metaverse thing, we were hesitating to say the word metaverse because it felt like dystopian and geeky and, you know, like very, very, not a concept that was very compelling. And suddenly, you know, somewhere in the first half of 2021, it became a mainstream concept all the way to the, you know, to the front page of the New York Times. So Patrick, what do you think happened?
Well, Mark, we actually had a similar experience internally at Cesium, where we do these quarterly planning meetings we call Refactors, yes, named after refactoring software. And early in the year when I started talking about the metaverse, I mean, I think people were maybe politely skeptical. And now people are running around Cesium saying, hey, the metaverse, we're building the metaverse, right? So we felt the same energy. As far as what has happened, I mean, I feel that the technology shifts are all coming together from hardware and software, from devices to GPUs, and that, you know, socially people want to be immersed in 3D, using technology. And there's been a ton of fundraising, a lot of money flowing this year as well. Do you want to speak to that, Mark?
Which part of it?
So there's been IPOs, there's been venture investment.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, it's hard to start thinking, you know, it's for me, you know, I'm a strong believer in Ray Kurzweil, you know, vision that technology evolves linearly in a logarithmic space. So there's a perceived sense of acceleration, but there is, in fact, a linear evolution in that logarithmic space. So I believe in that. But I think what we saw this year, as you alluded to, is the fact that money rained onto that parade. I mean, we saw massive IPOs, you know, Roblox in March, like shot up straight to almost $40 billion of valuation. Earlier in the year, late 2020, Unity shot up. Epic did their own raise in $1 billion in April. And then we don't know how much Apple is investing, but we know they're investing quite a bit. And then Meta became, you know, Facebook became very public in October with that $10 billion investment, mentioning 10,000 jobs. I mean, this is an incredible. So I think that endorsement by the financial community, and mentioned Rec Room, there's a lot of other, you know, big capital raises and everything. I think that's what made the topic raise to the public awareness and, you know, raised to the Wall Street Journal, to CNN and to those things. And it's also a sign of maturity. When investors vote with their dollar, they want to miss the train. And I think that's why we got that outburst of popularity around the metaverse.
Yeah, that reminds me too. Matthew Ball, who was on episode one, helping us define the metaverse. He has an exchange traded fund now, right? That was launched this year on the metaverse. We've even seen Jim Cramer on CNBC talk about the metaverse. It's really come quite a ways. Ruth, what do you think?
I was actually just talking to my kids about this last night, and the way I explained it to a couple of teenagers, for sure the money dropped, but also two other really important things I think happened this year. One is the pandemic forced us to start looking harder at ways to interact that aren't getting on a plane and going somewhere and having meetings in person. So a lot of things that people had been thinking about discussing, saying, oh, we'll get around to that, suddenly happened a whole lot faster. I can't even tell you how many projects I've heard about that were, oh, well, we were actually already working on this. We just finished a lot faster than we thought we were going to. And the other is the hardware that we're going to need is becoming more available, or at least closer. The ubiquity of 5G networks, or at least reasonable ubiquity thereof, that will enable a lot of the things that we want to see.
Yeah, I agree. It's, and we even saw, you know, 10 million VR headsets. So even VR, it was a pretty confidential up until now, you know, 10 million units. I don't remember off the top of my head the number of PSVRs, but it's also in the millions. So. And I think the maturity, we discussed with Bill Vass on the episode, you know, one episode of the podcast, but also the maturity of the cloud. I mean, the, you know, the ability to start streaming some of that 3D content, so you're less dependent on the end device. And so you can create a piece of interactive, immersive 3D content that gets sent. Get streamed, you know, to many web browsers. So yeah, there is this maturity. But I think the PR machine got crazy probably because of those investments. Actually, we saw it, Patrick, when we were working on our SIGGRAPH buff, and by the time, you know, you told the story the other day. By the time we submitted it in March and we got to do it, the landscape around the metaverse was so different, and the momentum and the requests that we got were absolutely crazy. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And Ruth, to your point on the devices, there's also been, you know, more early versions of AR wearables, right? That I think are getting people excited. And then I think a theme that we've seen throughout the podcast has been whether it's going to be VR, AR, or our phones or something rendered in the cloud. That's how you access the metaverse, but the metaverse is separate from the device, right? I think it's been an important topic.
Yeah, it was a big shift because when it was associated to VR, you know, it remained a confidential topic, as confidential as VR, actually. And when people understood that it's all about immersive, interactive, and social first, I think it's the one thing that was interesting to see over the year is that level of understanding that 3D enables that multi-user and that social component. And in the metaverse, you can do a lot of things that you did before, but you can do it with your buddies, with your pals, with your friends, with your colleagues, with your teammates. And I think that is something that is getting better understood. And people say, huh, I can see why this is a value, you know, why that VR thing was kind of something that was remote for people. So, but I think proving that the metaverse is social first, and, you know, we see it in platforms like Roblox and Fortnite, where people go there to look, listen to music and watch animated content because they can do this with their friends. So I think it's a strong differentiator of the metaverse. So another theme I think we were discussing, we saw in 2021, which is highly notable, is the momentum of Web3 and the appetite for more decentralization. And it shows up in different contexts, you know, all the way to some pretty extreme concepts like the whole decentralized, finance, and the cryptocurrencies and all of that, and the NFT craze. I think it's one thing we have to note about 2021. It was the year when everybody had to learn what NFTs were. I mean, do we even understand? Ruth, do you understand what NFTs are?
I think I understand it. And yet, if I try to explain it to someone else, it makes no sense. But I think that's what NFTs are. Like, nobody really understands how this thing has happened, how, Christie's and Sotheby's and everyone have gone all in on these NFTs selling for millions and millions of dollars. But there's not really any rational way to make it make sense.
Yeah. I mean, for us, we, you know, through our station colleagues, we, it's a topic that's important to us because if NFTs and smart contracts are the way that we can bring creators and artists, you know, a better share of the value of their work because they can participate in secondary sales, it would be an absolutely beautiful thing. But I guess the issue right now, those smart contracts are implemented using a highly centralized, unregulated technology, which is also, I don't want to get into a deep blockchain or distributed ledger conversation here, but it's a very, very heavy way to solve the problem. So I think, you know, it's been a year of observation for me. So we like a lot of things about decentralized ownership and abstracting the ownership of digital item from a platform. I think it's something we love. Having creator participate in secondary sales is something we love. But having this implemented in a platform that's kind of unregulated and a little bit of a wild, wild west is something that personally I'm pretty skeptical about and trying to stay away from. So I'm looking forward to 2022 and maybe start to see better, understand better, you know, how the decentralized models will work, how they're going to be regulated, how they're going to be fair, you know, because we see a lot of the scammy things going on, right?
And to be fair, plenty of technologies have seemed irrational and weird and nonsensical and all sorts of other adjectives like that when they first appeared. And then 10 years from now, we'll all be like, well, of course, NFTs. Why did we ever think that didn't make sense? Maybe.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's going to be an interesting. So what about the momentum or Web3? Well, how do you interpret that Web3 momentum?
Well, we're clearly at this inflection point where it's time for the next thing. But I think much like when we throw out any next tech word, there's so little agreement on exactly what it means. And so it's that big first hurdle of all agreeing on where we're headed and exactly what is meant when you use those words.
One of the notable things for me, and again, it's a very biased opinion. By the way, today I'm Mark from Epic, so I'm not the neutral host that I usually are. I will allow myself some opinions and some. As you know, at Epic we have a very public fight, you know, with the walled gardens and some fees that we consider are outrageous because they're not they're outrageous. So anyway, I'm not going to get into this, but I think it was interesting, you know, of course at Epic we've been thinking that for some time, but the amount of scrutiny that the big Web 2.0 companies and their practices around, you know, those platform fees, those store fees, and even data collection got in the limelight, I think is something interesting. And I think it's hopefully signals that the regulator is starting to pay attention and maybe as there is a platform change on the technology side, it could be, I'm an optimist, as you guys know. It could be an opportunity to kind of redefine, you know, a lot of the rules and to get something that's, you know, more fair and data, you know, we don't pay things with our data. We have improved privacy and, a better level playing field. So I think that's, for me, that would be the beauty of decentralization, moving a little bit away from those walled gardens because we had those big integrated products. I think that's what you call them politely. Don't call them walled gardens, call them big integrated platform products. So hopefully, you know, the 2021 could be remembered where the year was, you know, the thinking was shifting on those companies. They could do no wrong in 2018, 2019, 2020. They were the star of the stock market and, you know, they were leading the free world. And I think in 2021, I think we've sobered up on some of those big companies.
I don't know about do no wrong. I think we've done a lot of wrong with walled gardens, and there's a huge opportunity here as we move to the next thing to right those wrongs, but also the huge danger of just dramatically making them worse. And I think that's the key to making sure that all of this is done openly, open source, open standards, everything open, default to open, as we've long said at Red Hat, is to avoid some of those hazards, to make it a truly open world in every sense of the world, accessibly, technology-wise, making it a world for everyone and not for the few.
you know, here on open, especially open standards and open source. And I think all software, whether it's geospatial or game engines, you know, they're there to kind of bring the data to life, whether that data was scanned from the real world or data that an artist made in the form of a 3D model. And those creators deserve, right, fair value exchange. So for the value they create, they deserve to be able to claim a fair amount of that. And I know we're not in the prediction section yet of the podcast, but I'm hoping we see some great movement there.
Absolutely. So maybe we can segue into open standards and open source, I think. Before, Ruth, I want to come back one thing you said, you know, about being open. And I think it was Vlad Vukicevic from Unity said it on the podcast, I think. Like, we don't know what the metaverse is going to be. And there is a lot of problems to solve, you know, technical problem to probability. And I think what it was, his point of view is that if we can experiment in the open so that we can share the learning, I mean, this is how we move the agenda forward. And I think it was a striking comment for me, this notion of experimenting in the open and learning together. I guess it's the base of academic research people do, but I think as an industry, the more we can foster that experimentation in the open and shared learnings, I think it's the antidote to some of the risk that you were calling out, because it's true there's a lot of unresolved problems, and we need to leave businesses spaces to, you know, to create original solutions and differentiate themselves and create value and capture this value. We're not denying that, but if we want to build an open world and evolve the internet, I think this being very open, very experimentation for me is probably a good concept.
Yeah, when we talk about the principles of open source software development, we call that more politely rapid prototyping, but sometimes a little less politely, fail faster. Fail faster so you can solve the problems faster.
Yeah, when it comes to building the open metaverse, I think we're at this stage where we need to be very explicit about our failures, as you say. Fail fast forward was another term was used in the past, so that, you know, we all learn and we all can converge to something that works for everybody.
So that experiment in the open was one of my favorite quotes of all the podcasts thus far. And it's interesting. So for Kronos, you know, I've been involved in Kronos Group and GLTF specifically, I think for almost a decade at this point. And in 2012, 2013, we started doing all the specification development in the open on GitHub, which was, you know, kind of like a far out concept then. But now, you know, if you go to the Kronos GitHub page, there are so many different projects, whether it's Vulkan, GLTF, et cetera. And I think a lot of the kind of trust from the community and a lot of the growth of the ecosystem came from the fact that we were just so open so early.
I mean, from an open perspective, I mean, it was a good year. I mean, we saw another open source game engine, O3D. I think that was great. I think it's a great thing for the industry that, you know, such a like a very sophisticated, important piece of technology made its way to the world of open source. So we have an episode coming up, Patrick, with Juan from Godot and Royal from O3D. I look forward to that episode because we believe, you know, open source game engines is a good thing for the world.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I really am really thankful to the Linux Foundation and for AWS to launch an open 3D engine. And yeah, it looks like they've really put a lot of investment in.
Yeah, it's going really well too. So I'm also on the governing board for O3DE. And so I'll just put in the shout out for people to come contribute because that's how open source works. We would love to see more folks getting involved. The Discord is incredibly active. So that is totally the place to start. GitHub, of course, but just hop in the Discord and find the thing you're interested in working on and get rolling.
I know, Ruth, you're also involved with Apache, the Apache Software Foundation. So how was 2021 there?
Well, so it's been great from the perspective of software development in general, but we've always worked virtually, so no big deal. We keep rolling the way we have. But also, like the rest of the open source world, there were things that we were accustomed to doing in person when we meet up at events and ways that the whole pandemic life going on for another year has affected things like fundraising. So more the same, but also more challenges, I would say.
It's a bit unexpected that you would see funding challenge.
Well, you know, this is a whole other road that we could talk about, foundations and funding and how that's been through the pandemic. In some ways, it's been great. In some cases, you know, companies have had travel budgets that they needed to reallocate somewhere else. And in other cases, they sort of did a little panic and maybe didn't do the things that they had always been doing. So it's had a different effect on different open foundations. I participated in a project last year called FOSS Responders, where we got some folks together who recognized that the pandemic was having a serious effect, particularly on open source events, and to make sure that projects and foundations that needed financial help were getting it. So everybody's kind of banded together and made sure that everyone who wants to make it to the other side is going to make it to the other side. And I feel really good about that.
And for us, I mean, Patrick, everything we study in the podcast, we've been living in this dual world of GLTF and USD. And we've seen this conversation unravel and being touched upon almost that with every one of our guests. And I think it's great. I mean, it is one is an open standard, one is a piece of open source. I think it's interesting because it raises a lot of it raises the awareness of the difference between, you know, an open source implementation of something versus an industry defined open standard. And we had this episode, and Ruth, you were there with us on governance model. I think it was very telling. And ever since, you know, that conversation keeps on coming back because around, you know, there's a lot of goodness about USD. Pixar has done an amazing work designing USD. And we have an episode coming up with Guido Carani, the father of USD. And we get a little bit more insight on that, on the work that he did with his team at Pixar. It's just a brilliant piece of engineering. And everybody acknowledges that. What NVIDIA is doing with this, we heard from Michael Kass as well, is nothing short of amazing in terms of what they can do with it. But then there were still these nagging questions about the governance behind it. And, you know, how do we make sure that as the, you know, in the industry or the community wants to build an open metaverse, you know, how should that, if this is becoming the HTML of the metaverse, you know, how should that be governed? And I think it's a question that we start to see coming back podcast after podcast. And conversely, the GLTF approach, which is like open standards and committee driven, is good. And the question is, can it drive enough consensus and enough velocity so that it makes a difference, right? We see a lot of value there. So it's an interesting debate. I think personally, Patrick, I mean, did you form an opinion through those past like 8 or 9 podcast recording when we touched on the topic every time?
I mean, even over the past maybe 3 years, yeah, I think I have formed an opinion and a prediction, and I do believe that the full production authoring pipeline, where you may have dozens of specialized artists, it requires something like USD that's very full featured, very complete, and there's a ton of software built on it. When it comes to publishing, to lightweight, efficient transmission in the metaverse, I think GLTF is in a sweet spot right there. So I think just from a technology perspective, both of those can live together quite well, and we can have nice, you know, bi-directional transcoding paths. The governance, though, is still to be determined, because as you advance, say, GLTF to add attributes and behaviors to help support, you know, say, interoperable 3D assets within metaverse experiences, I would remove my car between Fortnite, Roblox, Minecraft. If we want to be able to transcode from GLTF to USD, you know, USD may require some modifications. And I don't yet know how that, you know, how that's going to happen.
I'm excited to hear that USD episode. I was going to add, while we're giving shout outs to projects and technologies and all of that, we should also give a nod back to our friend David and the Academy Software Foundation, all the work they have going on, which I hope is going to have some better collaboration with O3DE in the next year or two.
Yeah, we saw it's been a good year for the Academy Software Foundation, and a lot of their, in the Unreal Engine, we have OpenColor.io, OpenTimeline.io, OpenXR. I mean, we are big fans of what they're doing there. So should we move into all doing that prediction game so that we embarrass ourselves a year down the road listening back to this episode? Or
always the scary part.
Always the scary part. So, well, I can start. I have a prediction.
Okay, go.
I predict that Epic is going to release Unreal Engine 5, and it's going to be a watershed moment, because it will see people that we have the potential to create a metaverse that's indistinguishable from the real world. Whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, I leave it up to everybody to form opinions. I mean, there is a context where it's a good thing, like for digital twins and GIS, you want your cities to look like cities. As we have seen in the Matrix demo that we released recently, you know, nobody can tell which Keanu they're looking at. People are still wondering what it is they were looking at, you know. Is it a digital Keanu Reeves or is it a real Keanu Reeves? And I think there's going to be a lot of consequences when you can't believe your eyes anymore. You know, when you're used to use your eyes to say, you know, I can see if something is seeing is believing. You remember that? So I'm not going to get into that, but I took the easy route and I cheated. But my prediction is Epic's going to release UE5. It's going to make a huge difference. A very, very biased prediction.
Okay. I was going to cheat in a different way. And instead of predicting exactly, I'm going to offer a hope. Can I do that instead? Which is that at some point in the next year, we can all come together as a broad open source world and figure out how to do this together, because I'm seriously afraid that the train has gotten away from us. I feel like every day I have a new bucket of headlines that use the phrase company specific names, metaverse, and that's not what this should be. And I'm very afraid that train has already gone so far down the tracks that it's going to be hard to unify them in some open source, open standards fashion. So that's my hope, is that we make that happen in the next year. And if I would like to tack on a pipe dream, it's that maybe we come up with a new word besides metaverse, because I think it already has a really bad rap. And maybe one company sort of took half of it and used it for themselves.
Ruth, those are great, great predictions. I was actually thinking that I do believe, you know, the future of the internet is 3D immersive and social and collaborative. That's definitely happening. The term metaverse is maybe out to be determined, but definitely a lot of buzz right now. And I like your view for the open metaverse. Mark and I named this podcast and the Sigref session that on purpose, specifically open metaverse. I guess since both of you are cheating a little bit on predictions, I may do the same. I do think in 2022 that we will get an answer around USD and GLTF and how we can move forward together and how we can kind of help enable full authoring and publishing for the metaverse. I also, if I can continue my predictions, I personally think I've liked what I've heard from just so many big players, you know, entering the metaverse around their interest in openness. And I really hope in 2022 we can really hold everyone to that, right? And I think we'll see bridges built. You know, I use the Unreal Engine Cesium as an example of a bridge that just unlocked so much value to both sides of that. And I hope we see some surprising ones there, where maybe two big companies partner that you wouldn't have thought would have happened in the year before.
Oh, then I'll tack on to yours and mine that all of these companies that want, I'm using my air quote fingers, to do things openly in an open source fashion, actually do that and don't just use them as buzzwords.
Yeah, and I think I fully agree. And, you know, not only we do the podcast, but we try to have, that's why, you know, some trying to hold people accountable. We're trying to get them to come on record to say we need to do it. And then we're trying also to make things happen and have some very, very pragmatic goals in terms of driving more interoperability. I mean, we recorded with Martin and Ted from IKEA a few days ago, and he was reminding us that exchanging materials and stuff look the same is still not quite a solved problem. So, you know, you can look at, it's kind of looking at the glass half empty. You know, there are still, as an industry, I mean, after 25, 30 years, we're still struggling to, you know, to make things look the same. You know, we can exchange polygons now, but, you know, and, the forecast when we're going to have to exchange fully simulated world with playback with such a high level of fidelity is daunting. But at the same time, I mean, we're constantly hearing, and maybe because we talk to the technologists and less to the business people, that could be where the cognitive, you know, the difference comes, Ruth. Because I find myself much more optimistic than you when you said, you know, yeah, I mean, we can we can assume the worst, but you know, the people who are building it, as we talk to them, they're deeply aware that it's just bigger than every single company. And I think the running theme in this sense that it's going to be easier for each and every one of us if we end up agreeing on some things, because if you want to be successful, we need this thing to exist, and you know, so we need to connect it. So I'm actually hopeful that maybe let's predict something like, you know, that the successor of our SIGGRAPH buff of SIGGRAPH 2022, because Patrick and I have every intention to further the conversation there. Hopefully we can have some really concrete things to show and to say about, you know, moving the ball around and, you know, and maybe advancing that governance conversation around USD and like a better synchronization between USD and GLTF, and maybe, who knows, new things, because it's not that we plan on doing things, but it's the people we talk to when the momentum that we see, that's kind of illustrated through the podcast and some of the meetings, I think is real. Right, Patrick? I mean, we see some very sincere appetite to solve some of those problems.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think every individual we talk to is committed and is very serious about it.
I hope you're right. I'll call myself a cautious optimist. I'm usually the sunny optimist, but on this, I'm going to go with cautious optimist. I hope you're right.
No, but Ruth, you know, I mean, you're much more a pro. I mean, Patrick is experienced in open source, but you're seeing so much. You know, you're seeing open source across so many different verticals. So I think you're cautious. You know, we need to take stock of that. You know, of being cautious, but on the other hand, we have to swing for the fence, go for it, and try to make it happen. Because if we don't do now, it's the early days. You know, I think it's the more we wait, you know, the harder the bar is going to be.
Oh yeah, no, I think we're beyond time to wait. It's time to do.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. I think it's, you know, I think it's time for people to take a break. Forget about 2021. Enjoy the vacation. Get ready for 2022. It should be a big year for everybody, for our industry in general, for the tech industry.
I'm excited for all the events that we might actually have in person.
Oh, yeah. Getting back to that. But it's going to be interesting, because we all know that post-pandemic is not going to be pre-pandemic. And so all that, you know, we need to do all of that new world. I'm kind of eager to find out the new ways. I'm so happy to not travel personally. I spend way too much time in my life in aluminum tubes. Don't want to do it ever again, to be honest. So I'm looking forward to the metaverse as a business tool personally.
As soon as the events words were out of my mouth, I realized that's going to be the prediction I'm most scared of failing. We're going to do this again in a year from now, and it'd be like, oh, we still didn't get to have events. How distressing.
Well, I was just at the ITSIC conference, a modeling and simulation conference in Florida, but there were thousands of people in person on the floor.
I actually did do a few things in October. So Open Source Summit, and we had O3DEcon alongside KubeCon. And those things were significantly smaller than in the past. Things were very different. I couldn't have coffee during keynotes, which is hard, but they went really well. So I'm going to go back to continue to be cautiously optimistic.
Well, Patrick, thank you very much.
No, thank you, Mark, and thank you, Ruth.
Ruth, we are so happy to have you again. And to talk about open source and open everything. And I want to thank our audience, you know, where week after week get more and more feedback on the podcast. I think the topic is resonating with a lot of people. And our commitment for 2022 is to bring you more informed point of views and more interesting speakers. Right, Patrick? Can we take this commitment?
Absolutely.
New Year's resolution. Stick to the people who are making things happen and know what they're talking about.
It's a prediction we can count on.
It's a commitment. It's a New Year's resolution. All right. Thank you, everybody. As usual, if you want to reach us on social, tell us what you think. Tell us what you want to hear about. Tell us your feedback. Subscribe, listen, do all those things you need to do. Thank you very much. Have a great vacation, everybody.